Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who often contributes to this program with great intelligence and insight into the nature of the war for the free world, either as a guest, as he is today, or occasionally as a host, is my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, Jim Hansen, former special operator in the United States Army. These days, the executive vice president, I'm very pleased to say, of the Center for Security Policy, and one of our go-to guys, particularly with a, well, common-sense, boots-on-the-ground perspective on the national security challenges of our time. Jim Hansen, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be with you, Frank.
I was interested in talking with you about Russia, which is rearing its ugly head in a manner that is reminiscent of, if not in some ways, more worrying even than the dark days of the Cold War. Jim, Newspeg, of course, at the moment is the reported involvement of Russian hackers in obtaining and then in a very timely way releasing thousands of emails involving the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and the evident favoritism of the DNC for the former and against the latter. Now, all of that is of interest. There's a lot more there as well. What do you make of apparent Russian involvement in all of this and domestic political affairs of the United States?
I think anybody who doesn't see this as dangerous is fooling themselves. You know, there are plenty of partisans in the political world crowing about this. But in the end, this is a double-edged sword. You know, the people on the right now who think it's awesome that Hillary and the Democrats are taking shots might want to remind themselves that the RNC servers are not likely all that much more secure or free of things that they don't want aired in public either. This is Russia injecting itself into U.S. domestic politics at the presidential level. That's horrifying to me, and I think should be horrifying to anyone else. I think there's another aspect, though, aside from that. Putin has a habit, and the Russians do, of playing dish on me, I'll dish on you. And there were two recent times, the Panama Papers, which implicated a number of Russians, including many of Putin's friends, and then also the doping scandal of the Olympics, which also made Russia look very bad. And so I think that should be factored in, aside from the pure politics, as kind of a payback of making America look bad at a time when Russia's been looking bad, too.
I take that point, Jim. You've been in this national security business for a while. Is there any question in your mind that the Russians were involved in this email leak?
I think it's almost certain. And I think what is, I guess, scarier to me is the fact that if they've got those emails, isn't it almost certain that then they have Hillary's full set of deleted emails and everything else that she put on her bathroom server for the whole world to take? I mean, if they can get into actual secured by professional server, I don't think there's any question they've got Hillary's emails. And when are those coming out? And what kind of damage is that going to do? Because even the ones that have become public so far are just crushing to our ability to trust in her ability to run things. And I think what they may have beyond that is going to be even worse.
Yeah, and quite apart from her emails that were deleted, there are, of course, the emails that the government did recover that involve classified information. We could conceivably see that compromised further as well. Jim, among other things that the Russians are up to that I think is very troubling is a very aggressive, comprehensive even, nuclear buildup. And they've also been making a lot of noise of late about a willingness to actually use nuclear weapons. And I don't simply mean the threats that they periodically utter to, well, us, I guess, as well as our allies, for sure, but also the sort of change in their doctrine, which seems to indicate a propensity to use these very, very devastating instruments as a means of de-escalating a future conflict. What are your thoughts on all of that?
You know, Frank, there was a time when the Russians were an actual one-on-one legitimate foe for the United States in a force-on-force conventional war. That time has passed. The Russian military is not an expeditionary force in any real form. They couldn't roll tanks across Western Europe in any way that would matter for more than a few days. We'd squash them like bugs. But that doesn't make things safer, because Putin's ambitions and Russia's imperial nature make them probably more dangerous in a lesser role, because they want to appear bigger. And so, like you said, they'll use their asymmetric weapons, as in nuclear weapons, as a threat, and, you know, anything they can do to push in a way that makes them appear, you know, to posture larger and to be a bigger player. And they're doing a lot of that. And unfortunately, Obama's passive, weak, submissive nature has led them to push all over the place. They basically own as much of Syria as they want to, and pushed us out of the way there. And I think it's happening other places as well.
Were you troubled by some of the comments that were made by the Trump campaign and or its surrogates on that count?
I don't like anybody cozying up to dictators, you know, and Trump's team has been talking nice. And obviously, you know, Paul Manafort has had, Trump's campaign manager has had connections there. I think most of them were business related. You know, I don't know that these were national security type connections. But I think we need to remember that Russia is our enemy. And if Trump thinks he can play art of the deal with them, I'm sure he'd do a better job than Obama has or Hillary would. But I think he needs to be careful about how that appears to the American people, because we don't like evil dictators. And, you know, playing nice with them is not what we expect.
At least of equal concern is how it appears to the dictator himself, which could seem to me to be only emboldening of him. Hey, Jim, one other piece of this that's very troubling is that the Russians have apparently begun attacking U.S. forward operating bases for special forces in Syria. There seems to be very little doubt that they knew exactly what they were doing at the moment they struck. Apparently, there weren't any of our personnel there, or Brits, I guess, who were also using them. Is this a deliberate effort on the Putin regime's part to rub our nose in their ascendancy in Syria and their contempt for our leadership at the moment, do you think?
I think they're certainly contemptuous of our lack of leadership. And I think this was probably more a pressure point to try and get the Obama administration to agree to their, status of forces agreement for how all of us will operate in that arena. And essentially, that means pushing us out of the way and giving them the lead role, more or less guaranteeing Assad's permanence, and pointing out that they can do whatever they want because they're pretty sure we're not going to do anything about it. So all those put together do not leave me with a very warm and fuzzy feeling about the status of how all things in Iraq and Syria are going to turn out.
Yeah, apparently the Pentagon is quite peeved at this, as I guess the folks out at Langley, the Central Intelligence Agency, and yet they apparently are being rolled by John Kerry and I guess Ben Rhodes at the National Security Council in favor of a new arrangement with Putin that would presumably do just what you've said, Jim, sort of assure the ascendancy of the Russians and our submission to them.
Well, I wish that weren't true, Frank, but unfortunately, wishes and delusion seem to be the Obama foreign policy. And time and time again, they've been shown to be failures. This is just another instance of it. And hopefully, if Trump is elected, he can clean that up. If Hillary's elected, I think we'll see more of it and that doesn't bode well.
Look forward to doing that and more with you, Jim Hansen of the Center for Security Policy. We appreciate all your work, Jim, in uniform and that you're rendering to the country these days, especially in our counter-jihad campaign. Keep up that good work, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. Claudia Rosette joins us next. She's great investigative reporters. We'll talk with her a bit about Russia and also attacks now breaking out with some regularity in Germany. And more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, I'm Tim McGraw. The men and women of the Air Force Reserve play a vital role in protecting us at home and abroad. They are your neighbors, whose dedication to our country and commitment to their communities call them to serve. Dedication, commitment, and service. It happens every day at home and around the world. They're your neighbors, making a difference.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. It's a great pleasure to say joined by Claudia Rosette, one of the country's preeminent investigative reporters, a woman whose work at the Wall Street Journal, among other outlets, has earned her great recognition within her profession and also, I think, from those of us who appreciate the importance of particularly her exposure of wrongdoing and scandals in Iraq and at the United Nations and elsewhere. Claudia is a columnist for Forbes.com and also for PJ Media. She is now a foreign policy fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. And always a welcome guest here. Claudia, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here.
Where to begin? There's so much to talk about, Claudia. Maybe I could ask you, as a woman who spent a lot of time in Moscow back in the day, observing and trying to make sense of the Kremlin's machinations, what your thoughts are on a subject I touched on earlier with Jim Hansen, namely what Vladimir Putin is up to, and are we, in fact, emboldening him to do even more mischief or worse in the days ahead?
We've been emboldening him that way for years at this point. And what he's up to, Frank, there are the overt things. We know that Russia is rearming. We know that while the U.S. is cutting back, we know that 2 years ago, Putin basically seized Crimea from Ukraine and then proceeded to make war on Ukraine itself, in the shadows, but clearly Russia. And Russia has been conducting military maneuvers with China. We know that there's sort of an axis rising of militarized countries hostile to democracy, in which Russia is playing an important part. There are a lot of bad things that have been going on, and what comes to mind over and over is President Obama's off-mic comment to then Russia's Dmitry Medvedev saying that after his election in 2012, his re-election, he would be more flexible, to which Medvedev said, well, I will convey that to Vladimir.
Our guest is Claudia Rosette. She is a woman who, for many years, watched the Kremlin and reported on it for the Wall Street Journal. She is these days with the Independent Women's Forum. And Claudia, you were just talking about what Putin is doing in the face of Obama's expressed willingness to be more flexible in his second term. Would you talk a little bit about the Russian use of propaganda to spin their stories and try to, make inroads in American politics, the Democratic National Committee, the Republican candidate, and more?
Yeah, let me just add to the background on this. Of course, in the list of things that Russia under Putin has done in recent years, as President Obama has been more flexible toward Russia, following Hillary Clinton's reset of Russia, that Putin has also made this move that brought the Russian military back into Syria, and where they really are calling a lot of the shots right now, sending warships into the Mediterranean. He's been making moves on a lot of fronts. Now,
even attacking American facilities there, it turns out.
Correct. They're not after ISIS. They're after the people that the U.S. has been trying to support, as far as the U.S. has been trying to support anything in the war in Syria. But we don't know if it was President Putin who was behind the hack of the Democratic National Committee and the WikiLeaks of its emails, which are now sort of influencing American politics. There are certainly reasons to ask questions about whether it was. Various sources were reading in the news. My source here is the news, Frank. I don't have an inside track on this, but suggests that there were Russian fingerprints on this hacking. You do have to ask, was Putin involved? Would somebody dare do this, which is a very high-profile move that does play right into a very loaded American political scene right now without approval from the Kremlin? We don't know for sure, but activities of Russia in the past give us reasons to ask, are they playing here? And, President Putin is turning up on so many fronts right now. Another one, I'm looking right now at a story on Russia's TASS newswire in which the Turkish government is expressing gratitude to Putin for the, quote, unconditional support to the Erdogan government against the attempted coup recently. Now, again, you want to ask, what game was Putin playing? Was this simply unconditional support for the government of Erdogan? People have asked, was he involved in the coup? We don't know. So I don't want to represent myself as having any information.
What we do know, though, Claudia, is that the Russians, of course, have been at very serious loggerheads with Erdogan until recently. So this looks as though it's part of a game by Erdogan to shore up his position vis-a-vis the Putin regime, if nothing else. Hey, listen, before we run out of time, Claudia, I do want to switch gears. Speaking of Turkey, what the Turks have wrought with their allowance of mass migration, the Hydra, if you will, into Europe, seems to be contributing to this outbreak of violence in Germany, notably, in the past few days, and France as well, and probably elsewhere. Give us a flavor of what's happening in Europe at the moment and what you think is likely to come next.
Oh, there's been one Islamic terrorist attack after another. In France, in Germany, in Belgium, and you know, we're seeing in England, we're seeing at an accelerating pace.
But Claudia, we're told that these are not necessarily Islamic attacks, tied to terrorism and or jihad. Now, surely you're not suggesting that's wrong.
And part of what's going on there is when you read they were self-radicalized, what does that even mean? You know, that they read information that was out there, that this didn't happen in a vacuum. And a part of what I believe is happening with this scene is one attack makes a template for another. And what it says to sort of the word that spreads is for angry young Muslims, especially men, I think, although women have been part of these as well, that it sort of gives them both a template and effectively there's a license that they see in this to go out and murder people. And then you read these accounts in the press that sort of wonder, you know, what could it be? How did it happen? It's very clear that there is a spreading pattern of horrific mayhem, and a lot of it does seem in keeping with advice that has come out of ISIS, out of Al-Qaeda, out of terrorist groups on how to attack people.
Well, and combined with just the general admonition that they need to engage in jihad, which is coming out of all kinds of places, including Muslim Brotherhood
and
mosques.
Yeah, and Frank, there's one other thing I would add to this. The fact that the U.S. and its allies have allowed ISIS to hold territory in the Middle East, in Syria, to keep that so-called capital in Raqqa, is both terrible and almost certainly feeds into this. The message it sends over and over is that even the mighty United States, with its leader of a 66-member coalition that President Obama likes to advertise, has been so far impotent to remove that. And let's make an important distinction. It may be hard to stamp out a shadowy terrorist network that sort of operates wherever it can but has no real hold. You can chase it, you can pursue it, you do what you can. You may not be able to entirely eliminate it. But to allow such a thing, a group, an organization, to hold actual physical territory is staggering. And that's what's been the scene for more than 2 years now.
Claudia Rosette, I had wanted to ask you about the upcoming race for the Secretary General of the United Nations, but that will await another conversation. Thank you so much for the great work you do at Forbes.com and PJ Media, of course, as well as now at the Independent Women's Forum. I look forward to our next conversation. Come back to us soon. I hope you'll stay tuned for our next guest is Ryan Morrow. We'll be speaking with him about Germany and jihad there and beyond. That more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney.
My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. They're back! Like the villains in a Hollywood horror film, under Vladimir Putin's despotic rule, Russia's leaders have reverted to threatening global adversaries, deeply hostile to the United States and its allies. Their alleged involvement in leaking Democratic National Committee emails to undermine Hillary Clinton's candidacy and help Donald Trump would fit a pattern of Moscow's increasingly aggressive behavior. Cold War levels of intensity characterize their intelligence and propaganda operations. A frightening nuclear buildup is backing up intensifying threats of attacks. And the Kremlin has lately engaged in actual strikes on U.S. Special Forces facilities in Syria. Unfortunately, Hillary Clinton's ludicrous efforts at a reset with Russia, Barack Obama's promised increased flexibility towards Moscow after his re-election, and Donald Trump's avowed admiration for Putin have emboldened him. And that's not something you want to do with a thug like Putin. This is Frank Affney.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realize their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Ryan Morrow. Ryan is one of the bright young stars of the counter-jihad firmament, I think. He is these days a national security analyst for the Clarion Project, and you will see him frequently at Fox News and in other outlets. In fact, he has a piece up at Breitbart that we will be talking about in a moment. He is contributing mightily through his writings as well as his public appearances. He has also been a professor of homeland security, and I turn to him with regularity, and I'm always grateful that he takes the call. Ryan Morrow, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, Frank. Thank you. And thank you for everything that the Center has been doing lately. It's great work.
Thank you. And compliments back at you. Let me just ask, could you give us, we were just talking with Claudia Rosette a bit about the attacks in Europe over the past few weeks. Would you give us a sense of the state of the global jihad movement, for want of a better term? There's a lot of focus on the Islamic State, but put it in context, would you, Ryan? Is that the only thing we need to worry about, or is it a considerably bigger problem?
Well, you could kill every single member of ISIS and another ISIS-type group would rise up to take its place because their defeat is just viewed as Allah saying that you went off course at a certain point. And so another group would say, well, ISIS was successful 90% of the time. We figured out where they went wrong, and then they will just replace them and actually, in fact, be stronger because of the course correction. But overall, I think the global jihad movement is doing quite well, especially in light of everything going on in Turkey lately, and the fact that you're seeing this increase in attacks despite ISIS actually losing territory in Iraq and Syria, but they aren't losing it in the ideologically significant areas of those two countries.
And this really raises the question, Ryan Morrow, that you and the Clarion Project are so clear-eyed about, and that is, this really is a global movement animated by an ideology that they call Sharia, and it is very much on the march, it would seem, and not just in Europe, but here as well.
Sure, and one of the developments I've written about is that various Syrian forces are closing in on an area called Dabiq, which is where ISIS believes the final end times battle will begin, that ushers in this messianic type figure called the Mahdi, and it's a key pillar of the ISIS ideology that there will be this grand battle in the area of Dabiq, and it's about to begin. But to make matters even worse about what type of radicalization that will cause, or activation would probably be a better word, a lot of the Syrian forces that are closing in on an area are actually Al-Qaeda. So if this area that is centered around the ISIS promoted end times prophecies is just handed over to Al-Qaeda, then what did you really gain? In fact, it would probably become much worse.
Let me ask you about another piece of this, though, Ryan, which has largely gone unremarked, certainly in the West, though I do want to commend Senator Ted Cruz recently. He held a very important hearing exploring this phenomenon of what the Muslim Brotherhood calls civilization jihad. And again, you and your colleagues at the Clarion Project have done a lot to illuminate the prime movers behind that project, the Muslim Brotherhood. Give us a flavor of who these characters are. Maybe give us specifically some insight into this sort of vanguard of the civilization jihad, the group known as the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CARE.
Sure. CARE is basically a microcosm of what the Muslim Brotherhood is doing as a whole in the United States, and there are other Islamist movements that are involved. CARE being the voice that was set up to influence the media, influence public opinion and policy, and one of their most effective tactics is to go after people like you and myself who talk about this issue. And say even terms like civilization jihad, which is one of the Brotherhood's own terms. We didn't come up with it. And they say you are an Islamophobe. So they put out this Islamophobia report, and they went on a friend of mine's radio show, Corey Saylor did, who is the director of their Islamophobia monitoring department. And I went on the program after he attacked the Clarion Project, and we took him to task. And this organization's ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas were obviously explored, but we also explored some other things, like the fact that CARE did not discipline one of their officials for 3 years in a row, attacking the U.S. military on Memorial Day and saying that we should not honor the fallen, which I think tells you a lot about the deceptive nature of that organization. They put out this moderate face, yet one of their officials can say something like that. And the most they would say in the interview was, well, we discussed it internally, and they would not condemn it.
You know, another thing that is not well known about Council on American Islamic Relations, Ryan Morrow, is that the FBI formally renounced partnering with them, which would only seem sensible since for years CARE has warned Muslims not to be involved with the FBI, not to talk with the FBI. Can you talk about the nature of the relationship of this group, this Hamas-founded Muslim Brotherhood front organization, with both the FBI and other agencies of the United States government, including the White House?
Sure. There's a sick irony where the Justice Department labeled CARE as an entity of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood, specifically the Brotherhood section called the Palestine Committee that was led by a Hamas member who's now overseas. And so the same Justice Department that says this group has terrorist connections will meet with them and give them a platform. And that same Justice Department has also said when they chose to formally cut off ties to CARE after this information was released, they said one of the dangers that FBI personnel had in embracing them is the power of giving them a platform, having your picture taken as a credible voice and giving them that power ideologically. And yet, despite what the Justice Department has said about the danger of embracing an organization like this and giving them a platform. Yet you see prominent politicians and especially the Obama White House doing just that, with the latest example being the iftar dinner that happened at the White House, where, according to the Investigative Project on Terrorism, four CARE officials were present, but none were present from the Muslim Reform Movement, which is a collection of Muslim activists that oppose the ideology, the dangerous ideology that groups like CARE promote.
Brian, this is unfortunately not confined to the Obama administration. There have been some Republicans and certainly many Democrats who have embraced and had their pictures taken and otherwise supported the Council on American Islamic Relations. Talk about Tim Kaine, the new nominee for the vice presidency for the Democrats, and his relationship with these kinds of characters.
I recently wrote an article at Breitbart about this that goes over three different points in regards to Tim Kaine, who we've been following for years, as your organization has. The biggest and most important thing to know is that he appointed a Hamas supporter to his state immigration commission. Issam Omish, he was the head of the Muslim American Society, which the government said was founded as the overt arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. He served in various other Muslim Brotherhood terror-linked organizations, that all which would have popped up with a simple Google search. Yet Tim Kaine, as governor of Virginia, appointed him to his immigration commission, and when voices were raised saying, did you even look into this guy's background, the initial response was, well, that's bigotry. How dare you? Eventually, video came out of him openly supporting Hamas and saying that the Palestinians need to follow the jihad way in liberating their land. The pressure became too much, and then he resigned.
Not the kind of guy you want counseling on who to allow to immigrate to the United States, needless to say. Hey, Brian, there's so much more to talk about. I particularly want to drill down with you at an early moment, if we can, about what role the CARES and the Islamic Society of North America and the Muslim American Society and the rest are playing in building the infrastructure through their so-called civilization jihad, not so much nonviolent as pre-violent jihad, for the violent kind. But that's a subject for another day. Ryan Morrow of the Clarion Project, I appreciate so much your time. Thanks for the good work at Breitbart and elsewhere, and of course for your visits with us. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, we'll talk with Gordon Chang about the latest in China, including Susan Rice's visit there, and what we might expect from it. That more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has in 2015 begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hello, I'm Ace Lyons. As a retired 4-star admiral who served as Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, is a special privilege for me to talk to you about an important new book just released by the Center for Security Policy, China Prepares for Conflict, and Why We Must Do the Same. The book explains that while the Obama administration has dithered over the deterioration of the Middle East and ignored Asia, China has been moving to challenge and displace the dominant role the United States has played in this region and the world since the end of World War II. I am one of 9 co-authors of this important book. The others are former Senator Jim Talent, Gordon Chang, Peter Navarro, Kevin Freeman, Bill Gertz, Frank Gaffney, Fred Flights, and Dean Chang. I explained in my chapter how China's efforts over the last 20 years to seize control of almost the entire South China Sea is an indication of new assertiveness to advance its regional dominance at the expense of the United States. I take issue with President Obama's benign neglect of the threat from China and how Beijing is building islands in the South China Sea that it plans to turn into stationary aircraft carriers to threaten freedom of navigation in this region. Like the other authors of this book, I believe the next president must act immediately to restore American leadership and its military power, both of which have been seriously undermined by the disastrous policies of President Obama. We urgently need to modernize and increase the size of our land, naval, and air forces to stand up to China and other adversaries worldwide. We also need to recognize and counter the growing cyber and intelligence threats from China. The bottom line is that our nation needs to act now. I strongly commend this important book, China Prepares for Conflict and Why We Must Do the Same. You can read it for free as an ebook on the Center's website, securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We have the great privilege of being in the presence, virtually at least, of one of the country's preeminent authorities on East Asia. He is Gordon Chang, and we visit with him about this time each week, I'm very pleased to say. Gordon, of course, writes for the Daily Beast. He has a column at Forbes.com. He is also published at WorldAffairsJournal.com, and the author of 2 terrific books, The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Gordon, welcome, as always. Good to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Frank.
You've been writing for some time now, Gordon, about the turbulent rule of Xi Jinping and the evidence that despite the fact that he is widely regarded as perhaps the most powerful leader of China since Deng Xiaoping, he nonetheless is still running into domestic difficulties. The latest of his rivals seems to be the Premier Li. Talk a bit about him and the grudge match, as you've called it in your Forbes column, between the two men.
Premier Li Keqiang is supposed to be the head of the economy by virtue of his position. However, Xi Jinping, the ruler of China, the general secretary of the Communist Party, has taken over the economics portfolio, and that has led to what I call the grudge match between Xi Jinping and Li Keqiang. This is now broken out into the open at the beginning of this month, July 4th, coincidentally. Instructions about state-owned enterprises were given to officials of the State Council, which is China's cabinet. And there were written instructions that came from Xi Jinping and written instructions that came from Li, and they were mutually inconsistent. Xi Jinping talked about making state enterprises bigger and more under the control of the Communist Party. Li Keqiang talked about them responding to the market and also that they should be smaller. This has led to paralysis in economic decision-making in China, as you can imagine, because you have China's number one and number two leaders fighting. And so, therefore, officials don't know what to do. They're sitting on their hands, which is a problem for the economy. And, of course, this has implications for security, because a Chinese leadership that is fracturing is going to be a dangerous China.
One of the things that is going to impede the Chinese people's ability to understand what's going on in their leadership and the dangers that might be associated with it is a new wave of censorship. Gordon, talk a bit, if you would, about what the Chinese government is now trying to do in that respect at home.
The party propaganda outlets have now been given an important instruction. You know, they have always pretty much hewed closely to the propaganda line, but now that propaganda line is being given to the big online portals like Tencent and Sina. And this is important because these online portals have now been instructed not to carry any original reporting. The only news that they can carry is propaganda outlet pieces. And that is interesting because most Chinese get their news from Tencent and Sina and others. And that means essentially that all investigative reporting is now out the window. Most Chinese, when they get their news, get it online and they get it from these big portals. So this is a major development.
And Gordon, this fits into the larger pattern of China propagandizing not just its own population, but the world. Could you talk a little bit about Xinhua and the other means by which China is now trying to basically spin its story for an international audience as well?
For the last 7 or 8 years, the Chinese central government and the Communist Party have made it a number one goal to make sure that People's Daily, Xinhua News Agency, China Central Television are international so that they can affect opinion in other places. So, for instance, if you go to Times Square, you'll see a big billboard of Xinhua News Agency. Now, this, if you were go to Tiananmen in Beijing, the heart of the Chinese capital, you wouldn't see a billboard from Fox News or CNN. And then this is important because, you know, in the name of free expression, we allow the Chinese onto our airwaves. We allow them to sell newspapers, all sorts of things. But our media outlets are not given the same privileges in China. So this is not a free speech issue. This is a trade issue, and it's the issue of reciprocity. And it goes to the core of what the United States is. So we need to rethink this. Also, we've got to remember that Chinese journalists, quote-unquote, are often members, are spies. And so, therefore, there's another issue here. We give them visas easily, whereas China is very sparing with visas for American media outlets. So, again, the issue of reciprocity, we're not defending core American values. We're not defending American businesses. This is wrong. And it's not just this administration. The last one was just as bad.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think it's a hardy perennial now of American parties on both sides of the aisle. we have the great privilege of being in the presence of Gordon Chang. Writes for the Daily Beast. He has a column at Forbes.com. He is also published at WorldAffairsJournal.com. Let me ask you about the backdrop for all of this, Gordon, which is becoming, it seems, more ominous by the day. In the aftermath of the recent ruling by the Law of the Sea Tribunal arbitration panel, China's actually warned of disaster if the United States Navy persists in some of its freedom of navigation operations. Do you think they mean literally that they will go to war over those operations, or what do they have in mind?
Yeah, I don't think that they would go to war, but what they would do is interfere with those operations in a way that makes it difficult for us to sail in international waters. So, for instance, they're going to escalate in some way. That's pretty clear. One way they can do that is to surround our ships with fishing vessels, Coast Guard vessels, and in a way to prevent American ships from sailing where they have a right to be. And, of course, they're interfering in the air. They're dangerous intercepts. CNO Admiral Richardson said, conditioned further exchanges with the Chinese military on safe encounters in the air and on the sea. China has been doing everything possible to interfere with both the Navy and the Air Force in those endeavors. And this is, you know, just the attempt that they have, we've seen in the East China Sea as well, where they're trying to crowd out the United States. So we have to defend freedom of navigation. We've been doing that for 220, 230 years, and we can't stop now.
Gordon, Susan Rice is going, of course, as part of the run-up to the G20 discussions that will take place in September. What do you expect will be the agenda there? Will these security issues be prominent, do you think?
At the G20 in September, we will talk about security issues, South China Sea, and so many other problems we have with China. China will basically, though, keep them off the agenda because it is the host. It wants to talk about global economic cooperation. They want to make sure that a number of things, for instance, in the tax area, they want cooperation with the foreign tax authorities. They just had a finance minister's meeting in Chengdu in the G20. And China has set certain themes. The problem, of course, is that China has been gaming the international system, and that has been causing heartache. And therefore, I think the G20 is not going to be productive because China is going to shape the agenda to make sure that it won't be productive, at least from the perspective of Western countries.
Standard operating procedure, and one wonders why we keep going to China for these meetings and others. Gordon, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you very much for the work you do at the Daily Beast, and of course at Forbes.com and WorldAffairsJournal.com, as well as your visits with us each week. We'll talk soon, and in the meantime, we'll look forward to talking with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.